This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
My golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original and new cast of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I am Ken Tripp.
And I am Zach Moore. And this week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to have like a look back on the 30 episodes now that Ken and I have done together. Is that right?
30 episodes already, Zach. It's been a blast.
Yeah, if this was season one of TOS, this would be like, you know, the first season of originally. But back in the day, they didn't have these 10 and 13 episode seasons. We're talking about 30 episodes a season. It's incredible, huh?
It is how fast it goes. And, you know, I'll say this, Zach, and I know that there's been a lot of focus at making sure that we deliver every single week, right? And we're trying, and we really owe a lot to the listeners too for a lot of their great ideas and feedback and so forth. So yeah, it's not a big milestone at 30. This is our 163rd show across Standard Orbit, and I thought though as we were talking about this, we thought it'd be fun to talk about a lot of the episodes that we've done the last 30 and kind of how the response has been, how well it's hit home, and then some of the ones that kind of well. Not so much.
Right. So we'll kick things off. We got a great listener email from Thomas Flint. No relation to Flint from Requiem for Methuselah, I assume. But so thanks for that, Thomas. And he had a few great things to say, and I'll just read some of his email here. He says, "Another fine show, gentlemen. Loved hearing about the Enterprise's, and especially the earlier show with Paul Olson, the one where we talked about how, you know, you interviewed him, Ken, talking about the creation of the our favorite ship, the Enterprise refit from the motion picture." Thomas went on to say, "Also, excellent episodes on Uhura, Nichelle Nichols, Kirk's Loves, and Generations, which despite its weird plot, has some of the best acting of the movies, especially Sorin, Data, and the Klingon sisters." Well, that is your opinion, Thomas.
No, there's nothing wrong with it at all.
I love Brent Spiner. He's a funny guy. Data with a sense of humor. Didn't quite stick the landing in that movie, in our opinion. But hey, we'll be talking about Generations for generations, it seems, on this podcast. So
Be careful, though. We might have another intrusion of a couple of other people from another
that's
show.
That's right. We've upgraded our defense systems here, so we shouldn't have any unwarranted transports in. But anyway, Thomas went on. He had some great podcast ideas for us for other shows coming up, and we're going to put those into the hat that Ken and I draw out of every week. No, it's a little more scientific than that, but we're going to add those to the idea bin, and we'll definitely be touching on some of those, Thomas. So thank you for all of those. And he wraps everything up and say, "Thank you for your obvious respect for Star Trek and your engaging approaches to it from a lifelong fan and longtime listener of Standard Orbit." Well, thanks, Thomas.
Yeah, Thomas, that's real nice of you. And, you know, it's the second email that we've received, and it means a lot. It really does. And it's fun to see and get different perspectives on things, even when we may not absolutely agree on things. But you know, Tom just has some really good ideas in the body of that letter that we'll be looking at. And I think that's one of the challenging things you have when we are tasked, and I mean that in a very positive way, because it's a labor of love, of trying to bring new and interesting perspectives on the original series. And while we're very, very fortunate that the reboot included Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, so we can talk about that too. So, I mean, talk about having, I guess, the best of both worlds.
It's the wrong
we
show,
have
Ken.
Bookends. Yeah, stop it now. It wouldn't exist without art.
That's true.
Now, it's just one of those things where we really get to book in the beginning and the latest and greatest because, you know, every time I turn around, it looks like Star Trek Discovery is, well, it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back, which is unfortunate because I know all of us at the network are anxious and ready for it to launch.
There's a Mexican restaurant down the street from where I live. I get on the freeway and it's been under construction for a long time. And there's a sign, I have to take a picture of it soon. I always tell myself this, but I know as soon as I do, it might finally open, right? But they stopped construction for various legal reasons. But there are two tarps hanging on the sign and the fence in front of the restaurant. And it says, opening spring 2015. And I always laugh when I drive by, you know, and that reminds me of Star Trek Discovery because it's like every time you hear about a delay or, oh, yeah, you know, we don't want to rush things and, you know, we want to make it just right. I'm like, yeah, I get that, guys, but come on. This was supposed to be the 50th anniversary. We're going to coming spring 2018 Star Trek Discovery, right? I would not be surprised if there are more delays. You know, look, I hope it's great. I hope we all love it. I'm glad they're taking their time and giving a lot of attention, but man, it's just. Let's get to it, huh?
All right. So, what are the bets? Star Trek 4 or Discovery? Which airs first?
Ooh. Well, they haven't even started production on Star Trek 4 yet, so I'd have to say Discovery. I mean, they're not going to delay it that long, right?
I was little hint of
Deep Space Nine in HD or Star Trek Discovery. Place your bets, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, write your checks, folks. That's about all the way you're going to get there. So let's look back a little bit, Zach. You know, we were talking before the show started, and we were looking at the list as we were putting all this together. So the very first show that we did was on August 29th. We had just gotten back from STLV-50. And
so that's Star Trek Las Vegas 50 for all you uninitiated fans out there.
And there are no such things as uninitiated fans. If you're listening to a Star Trek podcast, you are in, man. You get it. And so we launched our first show, Star Trek Beyond Mars Attacks. And, you know, it did very well. And one of the things that is, as we look across all the episodes, I see a thread, a common theme. There's a lot of, I guess, I wouldn't say negativity, but a lot of controversy when it comes to the J.J. Kelvin timeline, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's very polarizing. I didn't really realize how polarized fans really were about it because, I mean, when it first came out, I was a lifelong Star Trek fan. I loved it. I thought, oh, well, this is great. I'm sure everybody's going to love it. But you get on the internet, right? And just people just love to, like, rip things apart on the internet, right? And it's like, wow, there's a lot of people that have some serious problems with this reboot. And it's not a perfect movie or anything. I mean, you can definitely pick it apart, but for what it was, I thought it was perfect, right? For what they were trying to achieve, I thought they achieved it, and it relaunched the franchise in a new and exciting way. And had they stayed on that trajectory, I don't think we'd have the divided family the way we do now, because I think Into Darkness is really what split a lot of people. I mean, you and I both have our issues with it. I feel like we're back on board now with Beyond, so things have kind of, you know, I feel like the general, I still feel, regardless of all the controversy, Ken, I do feel like the general feel of the fandom is like, 09 was good, Into Darkness was off, Beyond is back. Let's bring on number 4. I still feel like, yes, you have a very vocal, you know, very vocal crowd that doesn't really care for the Kelvin timeline. But I feel like overall, that's the general consensus. But still, it generates conversation for sure.
And that's the interesting piece, Zach, and that's where I was going. So everything you said is absolutely accurate, and it shows, right? We look at constantly what are the topics that seem to grab our audience, because we're not here to talk to each other. We're here to bring a show to you, to bring in, you know, some light entertainment that hopefully, you know, gives you a little bit of distraction from this crazy world. And boy, every day it gets crazier. And one of the things that we see is kind of a trend. There's a few that I see, but one of them is, if we talk about the Kelvin timeline and those movies in particular, in, or, you know, any pieces of it, whether it was our conversation episode, or we talk about things that feed into it, like we did with the space stations,
the rebooted fleet episode as well.
The rebooted fleet, yeah, the numbers just go through the roof. So so it's interesting to me. Now I know a lot of our fans really do like the Kelvin timeline. Don't get me wrong, but it is just amazing the change in the the amount of downloads that we get. And that's why we try to really mix it in when we can. And what I mean by that is we talk about the original series and we talk about the TOS movies, which also do very well. Then we'll get on themes. But then when it comes back to a theme or a specific subject that touches the Kelvin timeline, numbers just seem to fly.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive for something that's not really Star Trek, huh, Ken?
Well, that wasn't very nice, but we've seen that, yeah.
That's not real Star Trek.
Like, well, if you really, well, everything after 1969 is technically not real Star Trek if you're going to use those kinds of labels. So, you know, it's, you know, young minds, fresh ideas. Yeah. Let's be tolerant.
Yeah, we have seen a couple of people that have gone that way. Or one line I remember, you're not a true fan if you like these shows, right? Like, yeah, okay. You know, it is funny how something that's supposed to be entertaining, fun, and distracting for all the right reasons can bring so much, well, occasional hate and discontent.
You just got to laugh. I just got to laugh at it. Yeah, I find it quite amusing.
Yeah. But, you know, one thing I will say, the team that responds to us on the Babel Conference and all the folks, you know, I mean, I don't know, some of these guys, how fast they respond, whether it's Chris or Tim or Tony or any of them. It's amazing how fast. Always positive. Mm-hmm. You know? Always positive. Even if they disagree, it's done with respect. And that's the best thing about the Babel Conference and our listeners in particular. And that's why I love the fact that there's so many of the listeners who we've been talking to who have now become, you know, friends, which is kind of cool. But it is an interesting dynamic. And the other piece which I touched upon, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this, Zach, is kind of the theme shows that we did, right? Looking at the fleet, looking at origins, that type of stuff, looking at kind of how things have transpired from the original series all the way through to Enterprise.
Well, I think as Star Trek fans, we're always so interested in the minutia of everything, right? Like, the Star Trek has such a legacy to it, right? Even in the universe, you look at those great charts of like all the ships that were named Enterprise, and you see the little 1701 up there all the way down to the big Enterprise Z, and it's like, yeah, man, this thing has some history, some legacy to it, even though it's fictional. But then you can spin that out of like the real life history as well, like all the behind the scenes production, like why did they use this ship then? And this was reused for that. And it's fascinating on every level, inside and outside of the universe. And when we have those conversations, it reminds me of like, you know, I was a kid and I had the Star Trek encyclopedia, and I used to read that thing all the time. And it's like just breathing life into those conversations and just talking about, oh yeah, man, there was regular one and there was space dock and dry dock and they're different. You know, it's just all these little things that I thought of as a kid going through there. And it was just, I don't know, man. It's just something that draws me, because you love the world of Star Trek, right? And this is like exploring the world in which all these great stories exist in. And I think that's very interesting to everybody, really.
I agree. And it's kind of one of the favorite things I like to do. And of course, you know, there's a limited amount of those. Because there's a limited amount of shows. Yeah, we're going to run out eventually. But it is funny the response is there. And that's why we've been doing it, right? We really started off looking at Star Trek III, which had so many huge original things occur in it. And I just rewatched it the other day. It was on one of the cable channels. And I always smile now because of all the conversations that we've had. And I look at, oh, well, there's the Excelsior, you know, and there's this, and oh, there's the Bird of Prey, and there's this other. It's amazing. Space dock, whatever it was. How many things came from that? And then using kind of that same thing to talk about, you know, the two episodes that we did, just talking about the starships, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was ultimate nerd geek stuff. I loved it. I was, oh man, I mean
those conversations, they were pretty long episodes. They could have been twice as long if we really wanted to, you know.
Yeah, but you know, and it's funny because, you know, we talk too about the different perspectives between how people view things, you know, so men and women in particular, and all that. But Red Shirt Starship and the rebooted fleet, right? Episodes 141 and 142, those shot off like rockets, and they still do incredibly well. It is amazing when we look back over a month, and something that was published don't know, 5-6 months ago. Just continues to get a pretty hefty amount of downloads, and and I smile of it because I go back every once in a while, and when I'm on long drives, and if I'm not listening to a new podcast or I've gone through the whole Trek FM current up to date library of podcasts, then sometimes I'll go back and listen to that because it just gets me all smiley. I love my Starship, Zach. What can I tell you?
Yeah, I like to re-listen to old conversations as well once you've distanced yourself from them, because I do most of the editing on the show. So once I'm done with the show, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a break from this for a while because breathing it. But it's nice to revisit it when you're like, oh, I forgot that we mentioned that. Man, that joke hit pretty well. That was pretty funny, Zach. Good job. Or stuff like that. And like that one right there. I'm going to remember this 3 months from now. But anyway, it is fun to listen back to this stuff because, like I said, I mean, when you're... for me anyway, right? I was one of the only kids who watched Star Trek when I was a kid. And like I said, I'd read the Star Trek encyclopedia and all that. And I have way too much Star Trek knowledge committed to memory from that and onward. But, when you have the opportunity to have these conversations, not just with each other, Kim, but also like on the Babel Conference and then to have them contributing ideas out there. We throw out some ideas and you guys have been great to respond to those, right? And there's nothing worse than be like, hey guys, what are your thoughts on this? And it's like, oh, well, I guess we won't talk about that. But that hasn't really been an issue for us. You guys have really jumped on to every conversation we threw out there. And thank you, because like Ken said, that we're not doing this for each other. I mean, it'd be great to hang out every week and talk Star Trek for sure. But to know that, you guys have put in your 2 cents and want our 2 cents on them, I mean, that's very humbling to know. People care about our opinions about Star Trek, huh? Who would have thought?
Yep. So my needle's stuck. I can't get off this subject. So the starships. So when we started talking and asking the Babel Conference what their favorite ship was across the whole spectrum of Star Trek, I don't know for absolute sure, but it had to be, if not the longest, one of the longest threads ever on the Babel Conference. It went for a couple weeks, and people, having great discussions going back and forth, the pictures that were added, it was a lot of fun. And it was no surprise at all that, we took those, that input, and we created those two shows. And no wonder they took off, right? Because we had such huge participation. Like I've never seen before or since. I've seen some pretty long threads since then, but nothing compared to that. And I thought it was fun too that we could talk about the people specifically and what they were saying and why. And I think that's what made those episodes, to me anyway, very, very special.
Give the people what they want, Ken. That's what we try to do. So
yeah, but you got to try to figure out what they want first, right? And we hit on something, and that was pretty neat because we didn't know. It's like, hey, let's see what happens. I remember still to this day. On a Saturday, just we'll toss this out there, see what happens. And, my favorite starship is this. And then it was like, whoa, well, wait a minute. This is hot. Hey, Z, let's do a show about that.
Yeah, that really has taken off. And it's, I mean, you mentioned it, Cam, but those two starship shows are really hovering around the number one show of all time and downloads on standard orbit. Now, of course, the first show ever. Now, the first show ever, sometimes you need the cheese, which way back when Mike and Drew were doing the show from 2013, that remains the number one downloaded show in standard orbit history. But I'll tell you what, those Starship shows are closing on it. And that's not the only one that's closing in on it. Because as you said, Ken, you talk about the Kelvin timeline, downloads just start rolling in. They're rolling in. They're rolling in. And the show that Norm and I did, Blu-ray Beyond, talking about the Star Trek Beyond home video release, exploded. And, we try to time it where we talk about the show because we do put some thought into, like, when we talk about what we talk about, time it in, tapping in those hot button current events. As if the Blu-ray release is a hot button current event. But you guys know what I mean. And there were so many versions of Blu-ray Beyond, of Star Trek Beyond on Blu-ray. And we thought, you know what, let's break it down. Let's make like a little guide here so people can, you know, be informed before they go buy it. I mean, because, you know, I'm sure a lot of you guys pre-ordered it and that wasn't even a thought. You know, it drops on Amazon, you click immediately, add to cart, and it came to your door the first day. But, you know, a lot of people don't. They kind of wait and see. They want to know what's on this, what's on that. Because, man, I don't know what it is about these Kelvin Timeline movies, but there's so many options, right? They're from this retailer or that retailer. There's this special feature here or that extra bonus disc there or this Starship toy included here. So, you know, we decided, you know, let's break it down. Let's talk about the pros and cons of getting all this. Kind of, you know, a consumer reports on Starship Beyond, you know, home video release. That's what we really tried to do. And hopefully it helps you guys, you know, make some decisions on what to buy, because there are definite pros and cons to all those different versions. And, you know, that's a pretty long episode. Norm and I had a good time breaking it all down, but man, you know, that didn't stop you guys from listening all the way through, and we really appreciate it. That was a lot of fun to do, to have that conversation.
Yeah, was that over 2 hours? It was close to 2 hours.
Oh man, I think it was close to 2 hours. Yeah, almost as long as Star Trek Beyond itself.
Isn't that funny how that works? Yeah. So, you know, one thing about that episode, man, it really pisses me off. I was scheduled to do that show. And the little family crisis there, and I couldn't do the show. And wouldn't you know, it's the number one show of the new era.
Of the Kelvin timeline.
Both versions.
The Kelvin timeline of Standard Orbit.
Well, yeah, not just ours, but even, you know, it's the number two show ever. So if you think about it, the very first show is number one. It was created almost 4 years ago. And this show, which was, you know, done in November, is the number two downloaded show in history. It's incredible, and I'm insanely jealous, obviously, because, you know, the Commodore just swoops in, and he was scheduled to be on. The three of us were going to do the show. Good God, it would have been a three-hour show.
Too long. All
right, so you're welcome that I couldn't be there, but damn it, Norm. I mean, come on, dude. I mean, you come back one time, and it's now the number two show in Standard Orbit.
Sweeps Weeks, man. You gotta save the big guest stars for Sweeps Weeks. Get all the ratings, so that's how it works. November sweeps.
Yeah, and it was right mid-November. So, but anyway, I have to say that it was a very well done episode, and you guys had a blast doing it. That was obvious. And some of the questions you were asking each other is, why did they do it like that? This is great.
No, I mean, I think that's important, and it comes across on the other side of the microphone here, that we have a good time doing this. I mean, we do. You know, Ken and I have become friends doing this show, and we want to just kind of spread that friendship out to all you guys, you know, because we want it to feel like, you know, you're sitting down with your friends, you're having a conversation about Star Trek. You know how it is. It's like being, we want to recapture that lightning in a bottle that is, you know, Star Trek Las Vegas, for example. I mean, that's, you know, I was in a unique position where I had been doing stuff on the network for a while behind the scenes. I slowly started to mark my way in, you know, behind the microphone, doing from there to here and whatnot. But just as schedules have it, you know, going to Star Trek Las Vegas and then coming back, then I was, you know, one of the hosts of Standard Orbit, which, you know, had been my favorite show on the network. So that's like, oh man. And I was like one of those guys who's been a lifelong Star Trek fan who gets a role in Star Trek, right? It's like, oh man, I'm part of this awesome thing I've been a fan of. So it was great. It was great to meet everybody, you know, in the flesh, you know, because we'd all talked online, obviously, in various capacities. But, you know, just the atmosphere there. And I love Star Trek Las Vegas, and, you know, we all did. But more than just the events and all that, it was just the camaraderie of all getting together and hanging out for, gosh, like 4 or 5 days. It was so much fun. And so we want to just kind of capture that and spread it out throughout the year for everybody here in our conversations. At least that's the way I look at it.
No, it's a great way to look at it, because it's an interesting phenomenon, this Star Trek. There's no doubt about it. You know, there's nothing else like it in entertainment anywhere. And that's what drives it. So, you know, one of the other interesting things when we look across the spectrum of shows is the ones that I was like, oh, this is gonna rock it out, and it really didn't. I'm thinking, you know, about maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, you and I did a show on Uhura, Star of Freedom and Peace, and very pleasant responses on the Babel Conference all the way around. But boy, it really struggled. It's over time, it's gotten a few more downloads, but for whatever reason, you know, I couldn't think of a at the time anyway, because I remember we were going back and forth on topics, and we had come up with this, and it's like, wow, you know, Nichelle Nichols, Zoe Saldana, we even talked about Kim Stringer, and it was just it was kind of neat. I really enjoyed it. I said, I think this is going to hit it. Now, maybe the title was too fluffy. What do you think?
Too pretentious.
Star of Freedom and Peace. That was what they said her full name translated to.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those awkward episode titles of the original series, Ken.
By any other
name. Which was another show that didn't quite hit. I was like, man, this is cool. What does this episode title mean? And I had high hopes for this. And not that any of these shows are quote-unquote failures or anything, but you look at the total numbers, you're like, wow, this one is several hundred downloads below what last week. So for whatever reason, some things didn't connect. And, you know, to your point, Ken, talking about the Kelvin timeline again, that episode, we did talk about the Kelvin timeline. So I don't know. But whenever we focus in on just like purely the original series, there is not as much interest as there might have been otherwise. So just an interesting trend we've noticed looking at all the numbers here.
Yep, there's a few outliers, though. James R. Kirk did very, very well.
Well, I think James R. Kirk did well because, I mean, that's we had Brandon Shea Mitella on, our good friend and host of Melodic Treks, and that is both him and I's favorite episode of Star Trek. So I think our passion kind of broke through there, right?
Yeah, but we had Brandon on, so I figured it was going to sink like an anchor. Just kidding, Brandon. No, it was a great show. It was a lot of fun, and it did well, but you can't get more original series than that. And, you know, like I said, there's a few outliers where, you know, say, oh, boy, if we talk about that, the numbers don't go. And we're not looking at the numbers to try to be, like, king of ratings or anything. We want to understand what the audience wants, mm-hmm. and that's just pure data. And it helps us a lot, kind of, okay, should we go in this direction or not? Or if we think about things too similarly, that's why we stayed away from, I guess, specific, like, deep dives into to episodes not too often, right? I mean, we've done it, you know, so many alternative factors was really funny. And it didn't do that great either, but then it started to finally catch on.
Well, it had Brandon on it, so I knew it was going to sink like an anchor can.
Ah, that's what it was. Damn it, Brandon.
Well, you know, to that point, though, you know, we did the episode on the BBC banned shows, right? And that's closing in on really high numbers right now as well. So, you know, I think when you find some kind of angle that no one's heard of before, that was my whole objective with that show. I'm like, this is a really interesting fact. I've been a Star Trek fan my entire life. I've never heard about this before. This is crazy. You know, that the BBC had banned episodes of the original series for several years over there. Let's talk about it. Let's explore that, you know? And, you know, you guys seem to respond as well. We had some great response on that show, and that was very, very encouraging. Like, okay, let's keep digging for this obscure Star Trek trivia that no one's heard of, because I think when you're a fan of anything for a long time, and I probably said this on that episode, forgive me, I don't remember right at this moment, but when you're a fan of anything for a long time and you find out something new about it that's been a fact for a long time too, you're like, whoa, why haven't I heard about this? Why wasn't I told about this, right? Well, what's up with that? And it just ignites that interest again, because, you know, once you've been a Star Trek fan for so long, you think you've seen it all, you've read it all, you know all the facts, you know all the trivia, right? To a certain extent. But when something like that pops up, you're like, oh, wow, I guess I don't know everything. There are new things out there to discover beyond the final frontier. So
that was a very interesting show, and I thought you did your best Clark Kent imitation of. I mean, you dug. I mean, you got
investigative reporter.
You were, yes, and you were very mild mannered.
Oh, well, thank you.
By the way.
Oh, thank you. I was, certainly, yes.
The hat really was
the
you.
Fedora. But, yes.
yeah, it was. But that was fun, and you know, you're right. When you can strike a mind like that, and learn from it, and you know, the other piece of it that was fascinating is we have a lot of listeners in the UK. Because you know, the technology allows us to see our geography, and obviously we've got some good friends out there, and so their perspective on the Babel conference about the whole thing made it that much more intriguing for me.
Trading tapes and all that, just crazy talk.
Yeah. I mean, it was like this whole underground Star Trek, and you know, oh, we won't show that, and then they would sneak it into a convention so people who hadn't seen it before could see. I mean, it's just. Wow, right? That was a lot of fun. If I was to ask you, do you have like a top two or three episodes that we've done so far? Is that
like of my favorites that we've done?
Yeah, the ones you really enjoyed doing are the ones that just...
Well, definitely, you know, the ones where you weren't here. Those are my favorite.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, but definitely I think the Too Hot for TV, you know, because that really took off, and the response from that. Also, James R. Kirk, because that's something I'd really wanted to talk about for a long time, because that's such an odd episode for a lot of people. They don't really, I love where No Man Has Gone Before. Like I said, it's my favorite, but a lot of people, if you ask people their top 10 favorite list, you don't find it on there a lot. You know, people just kind of forget about it. Oh yeah, it's the second pilot, whatever. But you know, there's a lot to be discussed there. And we talked about that episode, three of us, from pretty much every possible angle. I really enjoyed that one. And then, you know, probably the ones, and this is for me, cause I came up with this idea, was the, you know, changing TNG episodes into TOS episodes. Like, that's always been an idea of discussion I've always wanted to have, you know, about Star Trek, and then finally had an avenue to do it because it was on the podcast. And I just find that very fascinating because the early seasons of TNG, they get a bad rap, I think, just because, you know, they don't have collars on. People don't take them as seriously. And sure, there's some stingers in there, but there's some great episodes. And even so, they're more so of any of the modern era of Star Trek, right? Any of the post-1987 onward prime time line of Star Trek. It is the most original series style those first couple years of The Next Generation. And that's because you had the same creative teams behind a lot of the episodes. They were formatting and basing their interpretation of what Star Trek was off of the original series, because that was all there was. You know, that was Star Trek, and they're like, well, we're doing Star Trek again. That was Star Trek. Let's do it the same kind of way. Hit or miss, sure, but just the flavor of it all was just so exciting. There's a lot of dynamic energy to those early episodes that fits in with TOS a lot more so. And, you know, you look, we love Next Generation, but that seventh season of Next Generation, it's like Star Trek, the family reunion, right? It's kind of boring. Like, oh, whose mother or sister or brother or son is on the ship this week, right? But in those early episodes, just not just the stories, but the way they were lit and the music and the just dynamic energy, like that, they really easily would slide into like a fourth and fifth season of TOS. And so that was a topic I was pretty passionate about, and I enjoyed having those conversations as well. So, you know, and then of course the ships episode as well that we were talking about. As you said, we geeked out, we nerded out so deep on those. So those are probably my favorites off the top of my head. So what about you, Ken?
Yeah, obviously I like the Starship ones. One of them that we really focused on that I enjoyed was the episode 155, Upping the Game, where we really got into the Corvette.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where that drove, it was a mildly successful show. It did okay, and it really was a lot of fun. And then, you know, we were talking about the space stations. Now, you know, I like those types of themes when we're looking at it. That was the one right after it, 156, that you you titled Regular Zero.
Well, it's the regular one and regular zeros.
Regular Zero, right? That's what we talk about, Regular Zero. Because there was an epitome. And I love it that when certain things get triggered in your head and you realize
an epiphany or an epitome?
Yep. An epiphany. An epiphany.
I thought you said epiphany.
No, I didn't, right? Did
Rewind
I?
Rewind the tape, guys.
That
we'll
would be
see.
The epitome of me if I was to do that. All right. Fix that then, man, Mr.
Are
editor.
We talking about Miri or what are little girls made of? That was another favorite moment.
That was a great moment.
Talk about favorite moments in Standard Orbit history. There you go. That's a good one.
That was. We got to be humble. But we'll take it the other way with Regular Zero. And that was when we were talking through it, and we were talking about Space Station Yorktown.
Mm.
And the fact that it was and still is, after all these movies and TV episodes, the only time you got to see what the Federation Utopia looked like, right? What it was meant to be, how it was representative, and you know, I know it was a space station, but that paradise and unity that we've never seen in the episodes. We've heard them talking about it. We've never really understood Trekonomics. None of it makes sense. But you know, where there's no prejudice, no nothing. Clean and people are happy and healthy, and all these races coming together to exemplify what the Federation means. And it was just funny because we were just talking about it, and it just was like, whoa, think about that, right? It for those that may or may not like Star Trek Beyond, there is something very significant and very symbolic in that movie that until we had this discussion didn't really come clear. And I thought that was kind of a neat moment.
Yeah, that was one of the most, like, all jokes aside, like one of the most profound things we probably said on this podcast, Ken. So all credit for you for tying that all together at the end, because it's like, oh, well, of course, when you said it, it's just the light switch flicked on. I'm like, oh yeah, that really is the embodiment of everything Star Trek stands for, and the Federation, that Roddenberry future that we're all striving towards. I mean, that's there it is right there on the screen, and it perfectly epitomized what Star Trek is all about. So absolutely, that's a great call, and something that's subtle but also obvious when you realize it. So just so good.
Yeah, yeah, and it shows the amount of effort. I have to give Simon Pegg a lot of credit, and Doug Jung for just the concepts and all the little, I guess, Easter eggs that they put into the show. And it really was a love letter to Star Trek. It really was. You know, whether you feel it executed well or not, and I think it did. They did it right. And so that was a big one, and I really enjoyed the very recent show we did with Nick Anastasio, episode 160, What If Old Could Be New Again. That show has taken off, and that's awesome, because that was taking old episodes into the Kelvin timeline. Wow, right? That's the perfect combination, I guess, because it has really flown. And then a lot of the feedback that we got in the Babel conference, and, you know, I remember Tim Hans was like, well, what about this episode or that? I was like, dang, yeah, that would be awesome. You know, there was a lot more than the nine we came up with. I guess it was eight, because you and I came up with.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
That's another one. Like, we originally discussed, like, oh, should we do five? Should we do three? It's like, well, man, if we do five, like, that's going to be another 2-hour episode. Not obviously, you guys don't mind this 2-hour episodes, but hey, you know, we got to put them together. They're long time, you know. So it's like, hey, let's rein it in a little bit and let's do three each. And I think that was a good representation. I think we all hit, you know, on a good representation in those episodes too, because, you know, we talked about, should we do like five? Should we do three? You know, if we did five, that would be a pretty long episode. Not that you guys mind, obviously, based off the numbers, but I feel like even with the three each that we picked, we did a pretty wide spectrum of Star Trek episodes that could be updated for the Kelvin timeline for various different reasons as well. It wasn't just like, oh, the special effects are bad, so let's get a new version of this. You know, there was like, hey, this is an interesting idea that didn't quite hit 100%, but if they redid it, they might be able to hit that home run this time around. So from different perspectives on why you're updating the episodes, not just for the whole, well, it was old looking and let's just kind of repackage it, put some new, throw some special effects at it and make it better. Now, a lot more reasons than that, which I find a very cool wrinkle to our conversation.
Yeah. It changed the shows and it made it go in different directions. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was interesting as heck too. For those of you listening, Nick Anastasio, he did the show from his workspace at Skywalker Ranch.
So, we should be telling people that. sorry, George.
Hopefully nobody at Skywalker Ranch is paying attention. But he was working the whole time. He was working. He was busy. But yeah, it was that was kind of a neat element. Even though for me, I think we finished up at close to 1:30 in the morning. Woo! We got to finish up soon because I'm running out of gas. But you know, I think that it's real important to for Zach and I to let you guys know how much we appreciate you. You know, we put out a Thanksgiving episode at that time just for that specific purpose, where we went through all the lists of names of people that had contributed. I can't speak today. People that contributed to us in the Babel conference, gave us ideas, or just, you know, nice words or words of encouragement or some good constructive criticisms, because it's all helpful. But you know, we're talking about these episodes because when we realized we hit 30, I was like, man, where did the time go? Right? I mean, there's only 52 weeks in a year. We've got 30 done. We're running towards the summer. It's almost springtime. And you know, it's a real joy and pleasure to be able to do this every week. And like I said, we're not numbers crazy in terms of, oh, we want to break records. We analyze the data to see what works and what hits and what we can do to continue to bring you a strong podcast. And so, you know, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, all of you, for your feedback, your encouragement, for listening in the first place, and reaching out. It means more to us than we can express, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's great to see all the numbers. I mean, like you said, we're not about, you know, just numbers, but I mean, it's encouraging to see, like, the numbers keep getting higher and higher, and we keep setting new records, and look, third highest show ever, second highest show ever. I mean, these are exciting times. I mean, it's like, well, like, can I say after every week we do well? Like, I guess we're doing something right, huh?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And to you, Zach, thank you. It was funny, for your listeners who don't know, when both Mr. Ataz and the Commodore announced that they were leaving for all the right reasons. You know, Norm was off into new adventures there, and he's doing really, really well. And don't take him off, man, because, I mean, I think he could probably cut you into about 27 pieces.
He would cut your head off in true Quickening style, yes.
That's right. And of course, Jeff, Mr. Atos, is going after his master's and his teaching certificate, which, you know, is just awesome. And he's got a great heart, and he's doing some wonderful things with children that, you know, that have challenges and so forth. Just wonderful. And it was like, okay, now what? And then Chris says, hey, Zach Moore is going to be on the show with you. I went, that's great. Who's Zach Moore?
That's most people's reaction when they hear my name, yes.
Yeah, of course. And you know what? We met in Las Vegas, I think, shortly before we really got rolling. And that was really helpful because we got to kind of establish a little bit of a chemistry. But it has been an absolute joy. Your energy, your patience with me, you know, your ability to pick me apart when I mispronounce things. It's great. I love it. It's very humbling, you know, not editing out my mistakes, but seems like yours never show up. I love it, Zach. It's wonderful.
No, well, you know, what are you going to do, right? When you're the editor, you have the final cut on the episode. So, well, thanks, Ken. I mean, it's been great getting to know you as well. And I feel like we truly become friends for all this whole podcasting thing. It's a great adventure to go on. And we're coming from different angles, you know, because, you know, you're coming from an older generation than I. So I think that really helps inform our conversation. That was not a dig. That was not a dig at your age. But no, we come from different points of view just because of, you know, our experiences growing up on Star Trek. I mean, you were there seeing the original series movies like as they came out at the theater. I mean, that's crazy because to me, they're always in my time, a shelf of VHS tapes. There, I'm aging myself here now, Ken. So VHS, none of this Blu-ray and streaming for me, kids, right? You had to actually eject the tape, rewind it, put the next tape in. Those were hard times, right, Ken?
those were hard times. I was my dad's remote control. That's how far back I go.
So, you know, growing up, like, I was Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager. Like, I'm one of those kids, like, well, you know, you're a Northeastern guy, right? One of those kids who lives in Boston these days, who's 10 years old, and they've seen all their favorite sports teams win a championship every year of their life, right? They're just spoiled, right? So I grew up in this embarrassment of riches when it came to Star Trek. I had Star Trek on home video, had Star Trek on TV every week, multiple series at some points, Star Trek toys everywhere. That was a fun show as well, talking about the Star Trek toys. But it was just, man, like, I just grew up in this, the golden age of Star Trek, really. And you, man, you put in your time as a Star Trek fan, had to wait between original series and motion picture, and then every 2 or 3 years for a movie. Like, that was like the wilderness, right? So, you know, I just think that's helped kind of inform our opinions on Star Trek, and that's what makes such fun conversation, because we both have, you know, very similar, we agree on a lot of this stuff and have very similar points of view on it all, but we're coming from different places, and I think that's what makes such a fun conversation. I feel like we complement each other well, so thank you. I feel like, you know, if we were a sports commentator, you know, broadcast team, you'd be like the play-by-play guy, and I'm like the color guy. That's the way I try to see it, so...
Hopefully not the two characters on Dodgeball.
It's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see how it works out for him.
I don't think he can see anything, Cotton. Oh, boy. Sorry, guys. Anyway, so we digress. So anyway, this has been a fun little show, and we've got some fun coming on our next week's show, right? We've got Dr. Trek himself.
Yeah, Larry Nemechek will be here. He's going to be talking about his documentary, The Khan of Wrath, which he's putting the final touches on, talking about the infamous Star Trek II convention that was held right here in my hometown of Houston, Texas. I'm going to have no insight on it because that was before I was born, but I'm very interested to learn more and more about this. A little preview. It was almost an epic fail of a convention, and they pulled it. They pulled it up from the nosedive at the last minute, but it's still quite a story, which Larry has, you know, spent the last couple of years going around documenting. He has several interviews from Walter Koenig to the late Harv Bennett, and also fans, people that were involved at the time. So it's very interesting topic of conversation. We're looking forward to picking his brain about it next week here on Standard Orbit.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun to talk to, and what a wealth of knowledge he is. And nice guy. We met him also in
Las Vegas.
Yeah,
we did. I was like, oh, I have your book. Team, so. I read. Yeah. Well, talking about previous episodes of Standard Orbit isn't the only thing we've been talking about this week here on Trek FM. Here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
my casting choices, okay, would be for Ruck, you got to go with Dave Bautista, right? He's Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. He played Jinx in...
Yeah, Inspector?
Yeah, not Jinx. What's his name? Hinks. Mr.
Hinks. Mr. Hinks. Yeah, Mr. Hinks.
That's the wrong James Bond film, everybody.
The 602 Club.
Going back to the Gotham thing really quickly, I know this is semi-derailing. Why would you want to move to Gotham? I mean, he has to have been there. It's like the picture that he has on his wall is this beautiful, shining, like daytime view, if I'm not mistaken, of Gotham, which I don't think we ever see. It was like, I'm not really sure. Charm City looks quite nice. Like,
so. Saturday morning trek.
It's very much like a continuation of the original series.
You know what? You raise a very good point, and it's one we probably should have talked about earlier, is that we talk so much about the animation and the limitations of the medium that we forget about the writing. And overall, it's pretty strong throughout the run.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So you can find us on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can always stream or download the MP3 file from our website at trek.fm and grab the RSS link as well. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button. That makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes and helps us increase our visibility for new listeners.
If you'd like to get in touch with us here at trek.fm, you can always find us on trek.fm/contact and look in the sidebar on the show page, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm and please leave us a voice message. You can also contact us through Twitter at trekfm, facebook.com/trekfm, and The Babel Conference. Type The Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar.
So let me talk to you for a second about Patreon, Zach. Patreon is the program that Trek FM employs in order to get donations to keep the network coming to you commercial free. It is wonderful. Most of the hosts here on Trek FM are big contributors to Patreon and found our way onto the network through Patreon. So if you can spare any money, and we don't care what the denomination is, it really means a lot to us because there is a lot of content that we're putting up there, a lot of bandwidth, a lot of programming, a lot of equipment that we need. So please, if you can help us out, we'd appreciate it. And all you have to do is go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/trekfm, and you can click any donation you want. And we do have some incentives for you. So for $15 a month, you get to join the Patrons Roundtable where you podcast. And you know, again, that is where a lot of us started. It was on the Roundtable. I was on the very first one. I had a blast. And if you can contribute $25 or more per month, then you get associate producer credits for whatever show you like. And we love our associate producers. So please, 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 if you have the ability, it is more than appreciated. And speaking of our associate producers, thank you from the bottom of our hearts to Renee Roberts, Aaron Harvey, Nicholas Anastasio, and of course, Norman Lau. Thank you all for your support of Standard Orbit and Trek FM through Patreon. Now you can find Renee at Twitter at @Emrys_1701. You can find our buddy Aaron Harvey at GeekFilter. You can find Norman Lau at Starfighter1701, and you can interact with Nick and all of us on the Babel Conference, and that's where we find Nick hanging out all the time. Yeah, and you can find me on the Babel Conference. I love to hang out there, and you can reach me through Facebook directly or via Twitter. My handle is @BostonSCPO. That stands for Senior Chief Petty Officer.
As for me, you can find me on Twitter @MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. And I'm also the host of my own podcast called Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show from the early 2000s. And we're on Twitter @AlwaysMallville with one S. And also, I'm around the Babel Conference as well. It's always great to talk to you guys on there, making conversation about our shows, other shows, general Star Trek topics, anything really on there. So thanks for listening, everyone. Join us again next time here on Trek.fm for another episode of Standard Orbit.